Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I'm an SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have a telecast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talks website at www.talkshoe.com. And search for call ID 17702 or Starfleet Universe On Call. Either way, you can find the broadcast there. Also, if you want the best experience, I'd say go over to Twitch. We are over at twitch.com/SFUOnCall. It's SFUONCALL. And you will find us there. And that's the best place just because that's where most people are chatting. And you actually can watch me. Wow. You might be careful. You might get scared by how I look. So, and of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, of course, the podcast account is sfuoncall. I got a personal account, which I keep separate from the podcast accounts because my life is not the podcast. Shocker. And that's Paul Franz. It's P-A-U-L-F-R-A-N-Z. There's no T in that. And, of course, if you want to follow me, that's great. I like it. That's fine. Just a reminder that I'm a really staunch Catholic. I'm a great O's fan. And, of course, I also love all kinds of tech, so if any of those things bothers you, then don't follow me. Of course, also have a tertiary account called Franz Games, where I announce things like what's happening on Franz Games, which is very low volume. You know, I don't usually have much to post there. It's not like I do client updates like every week or anything crazy like that. Even that would be, that's kind of low. But anyway, moving on, moving forward, of course, the lovely Talkcast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various feeds around the net. Some quick news from A to B. Actually, there is no news from A to B. It's pretty much all quiet. You know, some fluff stuff that was posted on the Facebook page. But overall, you know, things are going well. They're still in business. That's always good to hear. And definitely, It's nice. I haven't heard anything about Mr. Petrick. I'm assuming Mr. Petrick is doing well. He has, you know, had both those eye surgeries for cataracts, and he, you know, recovering well from both of those. Also, moving on to the SFB Online Tournament, the Sapphire Star Tournament 11. They only had one game played out this week. No, that's not actually that bad. That was one of the round one games. Now we have one more round one game to complete. 7 out of 8 games are completed. And it leaves one more game on round one to then have it so that the round two games can be finished. Because half the games there are done just like they had been last week. Moving on and forward to the SFB Online Library, the FedCom library hasn't had any progress. The SFB library has a couple minor updates, some fixes. I helped correct the refits, how the refits are done. Also, I fixed the ADRAT situation when it comes to the large Q ship. So, hopefully, if you need to use those for a campaign, then you will have them available and you will enjoy them. I hope you do. Obviously, if you have any issues, please feel free to contact me either through the contact page or also, of course, you can contact me right here on the podcast. You know, the SFU on call at gmail.com. That's fine too. So that is the news for this week. And it's me, yes, I'm Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, well, it's just me for the moment. Then you got Dave, and I'm sure there'll be other people showing up in the chat room on Twitch. As I mentioned in the news portion that if you do come to our lovely, lovely show, that you come over to Twitch for, if you want to see the video. If you just want audio, then I'd say maybe just use TalkShoe. But obviously Twitch, the good thing about Twitch is that there is an actual app. I'm not sure if TalkShoe has an app yet, but Twitch definitely does. So you can easily watch it on your phone. Though I'm not that's one thing I don't know about, which is I'm not sure if you can actually only if you have you can set up so you're just listening on Twitch. You know, basically like lock your phone while you're kind of listening, like you're listening to a radio broadcast. Don't know. Let me go check, Dave. Okay, let me just check. I currently don't see anything from you, Dave. Okay, yeah, currently I don't see any messages yet, so. Don't know. Okay. Anyhow, let's get back to actually the start of this wonderful, wonderful show. Well, we already got started, so duh. Want to wish people, you know, happy Memorial Day? You know, as that comes, of course, we have to remember our fallen soldiers, and of course, definitely thank those men and women that have volunteered to help protect us. You know, because somebody's got to do it, and I'm glad it's not me, and I thank them for their service in protecting my butt. You know. And to get back, oops, is that the one? Okay, that's it. Okay. Oh, okay. Just checking around to do what I want to do this evening, which is the one topic, which actually, if you looked at the Twitter, you'd see my topic, and I forgot to post it on the website before I started the podcast, and I apologize. I'm trying to get better about that as of late. I know I've been skipping. I might post 1 out of 3 at the moment. That's poor work on my part. Sorry. But anyhow, this evening actually was about something which I've talked about a long time ago, and I figured it's a good time to renew that discussion at the very least and bring it back up, which is Starfleet Battle Force. Of course, I don't think Starfleet Battle Force is the most popular game that A to B sells. I think we all can agree. And because of that, you know, and I think, yeah, here's the weird part about Starfleet Battle Force. That is, Starfleet Battle Force is not a tactical war game. You know, like Federation Commander, Starfleet Battles, the Stormata, you know, or the Call to Arms. It's not a board game where you put your pieces on the board and you move them around. It's a tactical board game where position, range, where your ships are located, that all matters. Starfleet Battle Force is a total abstraction of that scenario, really. It's more of an abstraction than it is for F&E. F&E, if you've ever actually played F&E or even watched F&E getting played, I know enough about F&E, and I've never played it, you know, myself. I read the rules, and I actually talked to I've seen, you know, the pieces for it, and I've talked to multiple F&E players about F&E. So they abstracted out, you know, the actual large fleets. So you basically have, you know, you have your battle line, and you have different specific pieces that can fill in certain blocks on your battle card. So that takes into consideration the specialized ships, maulers, scouts, carriers, things like that, where their special abilities are taken into consideration of on that board. Now, Star Wars Battle Force doesn't really do that all that much. You know, they're all ships. Yes, carriers can actually launch fighters, which is awesome. But, you know, we don't have scouts. We don't have, I don't think there's even a card for SWAX, which is an interesting ship by itself. Unfortunately, it's only for the Federation because of SWAX are a very powerful, can be a very powerful weapon when it comes to fleet battles, and that's why they're worth so much in fleet battles. I would agree with that. He's just mentioning that Maulers are way more effective in F&E than SFB. That's just because of, in SFB, you actually have to work through the tactics of using the Maulers in attacking a base, because I'm assuming that, I don't know this about the rules about F&E, I'm assuming that the Maulers have, are considered a lot more of, I'm not sure how used they are in open battles versus a approach battle when it comes to a base. Now, fixed installation. So I'm not sure how that's handled in F&E. But, you know, well, Starfleet Battle Force, you don't even have a Mauler because you can't. Because Maulers have no weapons, and Starfleet Battle Force, part of that is that after you have your ship cards, then you have your weapons action deck. But to actually fire a weapon, you have to draw a card with that weapon on it. So, and then you have a ship that you use to fire at another ship. You know, which is interesting by itself. There is no, gathering up all these ships to fire on a single ship. You can't, what's the best way of putting it? Dogpile. You can't dogpile on one ship, which is something that you can do in SFB. If you're in a tactical board game, F&E or FedCom, you can do that. You can say, I want to concentrate all my firepower for the whole fleet on a single ship. And that can be very effective. But in Starfleet Battle Force, you have one ship against one ship, which makes a lot of sense as a play mechanic. You know, if you're trying to take Starfleet Battle Force and using it to simulate what happens in an actual tactical battle, does it make sense? No, it doesn't. Now, the great thing about Starfleet Battle Force is it's not more popular than it is. It should be. Because the great thing about it is that it should appeal to those people that still love Star Trek, but they don't like tactical board games. That's my big concern of today's market. I don't know, and I'm being honest here, I don't know what the market is like for tactical board games. You know, back when I learned how I got introduced to gaming. You know, obviously one of the first ones I was Starfleet Battles, but then you had Warp War, you had Starfire, you had of course ASL. You know, Advanced Squad Leader. For those of you who don't know what that abbreviation means, right? Yeah, Chris. Yes, I mean war games. I'm not sure how war games, how if war games are still that popular overall. And yes, when it comes to war games, in the context of like Warhammer, where you actually set up your counters. They use counters. They use actual figures. They use figures, and you play out of battle or things like that. I'm not sure how popular war games are these days compared to board games. You know, I was going to say Galactic Conquest, but that's not the one I'm thinking of. Galactic something. It's been a long, long time. It's been quite a few years now. But the whole idea is that it abstracts the process. It's just no longer war game where you actually are fighting, you know, ship on ship. It's more of you're building this empire, you know, and that whole thing is abstracted. You know, it's more of what is it? I think German games. You know, you've got Galactic Civilization. That's not right. The one that you go through, something of ages. This is awful. I apologize. I can picture it. I can picture it. On my head, in my head, but I can't remember the name of it. It's awful. But anyway, for something like that. And I think those are more popular because they're a lot more accessible, and that's why I'm surprised Starfleet Battle Force isn't as accessible to people. Maybe the problem might be it's marketing. You know, maybe the word hasn't gotten out about Starfleet Battle Force because of A to B. If people know about A to B, because of course, there's always the rumors that A to B went out of business, you know, years ago. You know, they closed up shops. You can't get Starfleet Battles anymore. And yes, you can. And to me, a person who says that, you know, that they don't make Starfleet Battles anymore, and then tries to sell you Starfleet Battles because they don't make it anymore. And it's rare, rare, rare. It's like, you're lying. You're a cheat. Get out of my face. I don't know. That's why, you know, I've talked about it before, which is what I call SFU ships. The whole idea is taking Starfleet Battles, the core, if you wipe away everything and you break it down to core mechanics of what makes Starfleet Battles Starfleet Battles, you know, the whole idea of impulse movement, you know, that's part of the game right there. The whole idea of doing like an energy allocation of sorts, the damage allocation, you know, the DAC. Those are parts that are it's just a basic of the game. so much so that, you know, the FedCom. Now, obviously, if you want to make it more accessible, well, you remove, not even, you don't have to remove the DAC. You just simply might simplify the DAC. It's because that's the whole idea of what they did with the PFs. The PFs actually had a separate DAC because of a lot of the systems don't exist in the PF. You know, so you were, instead of rolling 2D6, you have 1D6. And you have this you have the abbreviated DAC. I'm not sure if I have it laying around. I probably don't. If I wanted to, I could go downstairs and get it, but I don't think you guys are going to sit here, at least the live stream, would actually sit here and wait for me to go get it. You know, I think it's kind of crazy. Of course, I didn't know I was going to go down this path. But yeah, geez. Yeah, Chris, depends upon you're talking about Starmada or Klingon Armada. You know, because those are two different damage allocation systems. And when you have a chance, please reply. But anyway, so you know, the whole idea is simplification, because even I like Starmada. I like the original one way back when, where you actually had to plot your movement, which I thought was kind of cool. I liked it. But as I pointed out before, the one thing I did not like about the beginning game was the way they treated drones. Drones just were wrong. Okay. So Chris says, you know, Starmada SFU. Okay. I can see that. I can see that. Now, to be honest, I remember some of it, but not completely, because it's been a while since I've actually read the rules. Because I've rarely, well, I've had never had Unity. Well, Unity. Yeah, and that's what I meant, Unity. Chris, do we want to go down that road? With Unity, I'll make this comment and I'll get back on the Starfleet Battle Force stuff. And that is, when it comes to Starmada, in my mind, I don't like the Unity Edition in that it forces, instead of saying, this is the way, you know, simplifying and say, this is the way it's done. They actually have said, you can do this or you can do this. So it gives you options. And I can understand why they did that. They did that because of, they went, the original version that came out with had, you know, the Star SFB material in it. The original Klingon Armada, I forget the edition of that at the moment off the top of my head, and that's awful. And then they had the next edition, which they improved the weapon systems. I agree that they fixed the drone issue, the fighters, much better representation of what's there. But I didn't like the way they changed the movement. I didn't like the way they did the shields. They tried something which doesn't work. Nova edition. Yeah, I like the Admiralty edition. I understand that's why they created Unity. Unity is basically a combining of Admiralty and Nova when it comes to certain aspects. So you can actually get a choice, and it's one product instead of having to do the whole Starfire thing where, okay, which edition you're playing? You're playing the third edition or the fourth edition? Because, man, going back on that, I was way back in the day. Oh, Lord have mercy. It's been over 10 years now. I was part of the Starfire mailing list. I was not active. I just wanted to know what was going on because I was interested in Starfire. But that's when they had the whole kerfuffle with Marvin Lamb and the redoing of the rules and all that kind of thing. I was there as part of that whole kerfuffle. At least I was quote unquote there. You know, how much there you can be on the internet. And I don't know how it turned out, that thing, but I'm not sure where Starfire went onward from there. But anyhow, getting back to Starfleet Battle Force, the thing is with Starfleet Battle Force, you know, I think it's a simplified thing. I think it'd be great to be able to play it. Now, many, many years ago, I actually worked on Starfleet Battle Force, you know, the card. Yeah, Iggy, when it comes to Starfire, yeah, Starfire is cool. The most complicated thing on Starfire, most complicated thing about Starfire itself was just plain that, the most complicated thing about Starfire when I actually tried to learn it was how to build ships. And that was one thing that I really felt. I start reading it and I really felt deep in my bones. This needs to be rewritten to make it more like Starfleet Battles in the way it's organized. Because I always felt that organizationally speaking, it was a mess. So I'm not... actually, that's one thing I really should look at. And I apologize, Chris. I know you sent me the original rules for Starfire. And if I recall correctly, those were written by Cole himself. And I have not, I really should read those, especially considering, I'm assuming that Starfire has, I'm not sure if Starfire, the original rule book, actually has building rules for doing campaigns. My guess, they might not. I might just say, okay, here's the ships, and this is how it works. And so they don't have rules for campaigns versus, you know, later on with edition 3 and 4. Edition 3 and 4, where they redid, you know, they actually had it designed more for campaigns. So anyhow, but you know, they did have building rules. Okay. Yeah. And for those people who are listening or watching this later or on YouTube, Iggy has mentioned that the strategic game is insane in the four through six editions of Starfire. So he agrees with me. There it is. But the one thing with Starfire is that way back when, many, many years ago now, I actually, when Steve Cole was notified that somebody had basically taken all the IP for Starfleet Battle Force and added it into it as a vassal client, which you can probably do. There's Starfleet Battles on vassal you can't do. I'm sorry, you cannot run Starfleet Battles on vassal because of there are certain things that it does not support. And the whole idea is a oh yeah. I'm sure there is Indy Spy behind me. Hold on. Yep, there he is. Okay. My black cat, Sokka, which I know. My daughter, she likes The last Airbender. Loves that show. Okay. But anyhow, so yeah, I'm just gonna do that real quick, and then I'll get to you, Gary, in just a moment. Which is back in the day, you know, actually, I took that, I started making a card game to play. I figured, you know, first, have it so you can actually play, you know, on a single and then work on communication over the internet. And Lord knows that's what you really want to do, is you want to play with other people. And of course, the biggest issue in my mind when it comes to Unity is like, okay, you don't have built-in communication between players. You can buy modules and things like that. I'm not sure how that all worked, and I never got to that point. And I never got the card game working all that well. I tried to follow a tutorial on how to create a card game in Unity, and it failed. And that's why it never came to be. Because it's not something that I really wanted to do desperately well. So I didn't actually do that. But anyhow, let me see what Gary wants. Whoops. There it goes. Huh? Hate that. Dang it. Okay. Hey, Gary.
Hello. Sorry for it to be. Sorry, I'm a bit late. Did Barry make it or no?
Nope. He was fried. He's texted me and said that he's completely fried because of he's working in a warehouse where it's basically over. It's like in the mid 90s. So he's tired.
I don't have my Celsius calculator in my brain, but I'll assume that's one.
Yeah. I forget what it is in Celsius. Sorry. I'm sure someone probably in the chat room could probably tell me what 95 degrees is in Celsius. Been a while since I think you take the 95 minus 32, then I forget what you multiply by. I think it's like 5/8 or something like that. Or 5/9, I forget what it is. It's been so long since I had to do the conversions. That was at like elementary school. Ah, thank you. Dave has mentioned it's like 36 degrees Celsius.
Oof, that's not good.
Yeah, agreed. But anyhow, now that you're here, is there a topic that you wanted to the talk on, or?
Well, so I guess on the BBS, someone was posting recently about an idea that he was suggesting for Fed and Empire. Basically, he was proposing what an order of battle would look like for them if they, rather than decided not to build Hawks and instead stuck with Kestrels.
Right.
So I was responding to that and saying that, there's a couple of, Andromedan war era variants that the Romulans could do with in that circumstance. So, for example, they could probably do with because the current K7X is it's not a command cruiser, it's just a battle cruiser. So they probably need a Kestrel version of the DX with command rating 10 and to lead like X squadrons. And then also they probably need maybe a fast propulsion version of the tender version of the the Romulan version of the D5X, if there is one. But anyway, so they probably need something like that so they can go after RTN nodes. Because right now they have the Firehawk EX and the Sparrowhawk EX, but if there's a universe where they don't exist, then they need a Klingon hull equivalent to do that instead.
Mm-hmm. Understood.
I was just curious as to, because there had been last year, you might recall, that they released a Module R4J mm-hmm. Shadow of the Eagle. So I was just curious as to whether there'd actually be enough people interested in like a Shadow of the Kestrel version that basically gave you all the missing Kestrels you needed to run a Romulan Empire with just Kestrels, or if there wouldn't be.
Mm-hmm. Understood. I actually, personally, I think it's a neat idea. Because of, obviously, I kind of like the Kestrel ships, you know. Of course, it's classic Klingon design, so what's there not to like? And I think that would, obviously, I think it's from an F&E standpoint, I think it's an excellent alternate futures F&E game to play. And working out the details of the order of order of battle. That's it, order of battle. and the schedule for getting the different things into production, which would be interesting. Through, you know, all the way through into the X ship world and so forth. I think would be quite interesting and definitely worth doing myself. You know, if for nothing else, for an alternate reality, you know, an alternate universe that uses that, you know, as like what they did with the what am I thinking of? Oh, yeah, the alternate futures for like the Carnivons and things like that.
Or for the Romulans themselves, as I say, with Modular Virtue, with the Eagles. I think we were we might have discussed them on the program before. But I guess from an SFB or FedCom standpoint, I guess one thing that would stand out for them is that their fleet would be more agile because they'd have the Klingon turn modes. But on the other hand, the Kestrels don't have the mount placings to allow them to field Type R torpedoes very well. Or for that matter, they still also have the very high cloaking costs because in both FC and SFB, ships that are basically designed not to use, as in like they weren't designed to use the cloak, they had the highest cost in terms of running it. Right. So that would basically become like an ongoing thing for them. But of course, strategically, you wouldn't see that because the cloak rules work the same no matter which type of ship you're using at the FFF and the FNH scale. So there is that. But so I was just curious as to whether or not you thought about any particular variants that you haven't seen yet that you think would be worth like checking out or that you'd like to fly yourself or anything.
When it comes to the Kestrels?
So, if you were drawing up a list of SSDs that don't already exist in print, either X ships or non X ships, what would you want? And is there any particular, I don't know if tricks is the right word, but any particular things that you'd like them to do that aren't already covered by the ships you already have?
I'm not sure of the question. Are you asking me?
Okay, so for example, for example, right now the only heavy war destroyer, or X heavy war destroyer that the Romulans have, is the Saber Hawk or the Saber Hawk X.
Mm-hmm.
So there isn't a Kestrel version of the Klingon HF5 or HF5X.
Right.
So in theory, you could probably do Romulan versions of them. But for certain missions, because they're still considered to be size class 4 ships, they don't quite have... So for example, if you look at the current Romulan ships, if you want to try to go after the Andromedan satellite bases, if you convert a Saberhawk to be a fast 4 ship tender, it has weaker plasma torpedoes because you can't... For a non-X ship, you can't install... you can't install S-torps, and if it's X-ship, you can't install N-torps. So if you compare that to, say, a Sparrowhawk E or a Sparrowhawk EX, they have a heavier plasma throw rate, and they also have the same they have better sensors as well because they have 4 instead of 2, and they also have the full flotilla of the that the Saberhawk would take. So you're not really, I guess, gaining anything by taking the Saberhawk rather than taking the Sparrowhawk in the same configuration. But would the same be true if you were working up new SSDs for Kestrels doing those same things? Or is there something, else that would happen when you do it?
So basically, you're asking if given a pure Kestrel timeline for the Romulans, that they basically never actually created the new Hawk new Hawk? I forgot the new generation of Romulan ships are called. You have the Eagles, which are the old Romulans, and then you have the new Romulans. But anyway, assuming
Yeah, the Hawk series, that's right.
okay, the Hawk series. That didn't happen, and basically they're all built, all Kestrels, i.e., they were all imported from Klingon, from the Klingon Empire, and then converted, basically.
Well, you would actually have to go one step further because you'd have to retool the Romulan shipyards so that they can build Kestrels. So the shipyards that in the regular timeline are building Sparrowhawks or Firehawks, instead they're building Kestrel cruisers instead, or dreadnoughts or whatever.
Okay. That'd be interesting. So, well, in that case, would the Kestrels be built purely from the design that the Klingons have, and but just modified for Romulan weapons, or would are you talking about ships that are basically, very close to a Klingon design, but can be are slightly modified in addition to just the whoops. Don't know who that is.
Well, I'm just going by the premise from the post. So it seems that the person, I don't know if you can find it on, if you have the BBS open, but basically the guy's proposing that you would basically just use the Kestrels, either the ones that already exist, but or you would have to convert other ones. Like you basically have to go through the Klingon Master Starship book and then pick out the base hulls that the Romulans never got, and that don't already have SSDs in print. So, for example, if you look at the Klingon C7, there's already an SSD or a ship card for the KC7R. So you don't need to create that ship card. But if you're looking at, say, I'm trying to think what else now, actually. Yeah, so maybe like the Klingon C5, like the light dreadnought. So far as I recall, there isn't a Romulan version of it. Maybe there is, if I'm mistaken, but I don't believe there is. So yeah, basically, there'd be those kind of things that don't already exist. So you draw them up the same way, but it's just like in the historical timeline, the Romulans would never get around to them, or at least they haven't come up with an excuse for them to have them. But in this other timeline, they'd be building them themselves. With maybe they'd import the blueprints from the Klingons, and then they just, based on the technology they have on hand, they'd build them themselves. Or
okay. Sorry, I was just reading the section about it that Ryan, sorry, Surin Klein. I think I might be pronouncing it right. So basically, instead of creating the Hawk series, you'd be taking the Kestrels and then modifying them, basically creating new SSDs based on the KR line. The whole look, a Klingon design, basically. Correct?
Well, so for example, he posted sample orders of battle that have been modified to swap out more of the Hawk ships and put in more of the Kestrel ships. But he does note that there's a number of mission variants that don't exist as Kestrels, even if Klingon versions of them exist back in the Klingon Empire. So my follow-up to that was basically to say, well, I mean, if you sat down and did a list of all those Kestrels that haven't been printed yet, would there be enough of them to create like a new module that gave you them? And if so, would there be enough people that like the Kestrels to make it worth ADB's time to do that?
That's always the question, is the market, when it comes to the product itself. Is there a market out there that would actually buy those? My guess overall is that there would be a market for them because of they're still staying within the Alpha Octant, so they're still, it's not like we're asking to buy, the Zerkalians or some other new empire, which no one knows about and is not part of the original canon of the original series. So I think overall there would be interest in such a product. When it comes to what variants of the KRs, the Kestrel ships, that's I don't that I would like to see, that I think would have, need to be there to fill in the gaps that currently are held by the Hawk series Romulan ships. That's a tougher one altogether, just because of, to be honest, I'm not that familiar with all of the Romulan ships. I that's a it's a rare I don't, unlike my years of my youth, I don't spend my evenings looking over the R modules and looking at, or even some of the regular other ships that are part of the normal rule book, and looking at their ships and saying, "Oh, that's a cool one. Let's see what it has," and things like that. I haven't done that for years. Off the cuff, I could not tell you of any Kestrels variants that I would like, that I think would be needed to fill in holes that would be left with the Hawk series basically being gone. Understood, Chris. He likes the Mastership books, Starship books. So sorry on that regard. Because Lord knows a lot of the ships do exist. There is, in theory, was that cons I'm pretty sure there was basically a B-10 Kestrel. They did not, I don't think they ever sold it to the Klingon. I'm sorry, to the Romulan, sorry. Klingons didn't sell it to the Romulans, but there was actually a KB-10 R ship, that was at least the SSD that was created, and obviously if you have that ship, okay, 10R, thank you, Chris. You can easily from that you can easily get the variants that would be required, like conversion of the B-10 to an SES, ship, space control ship, which could fill in that gap where you that would be left in the Hawk series, if the Hawk series would go away, and obviously some of the other ones could be easily converted when it comes to the K, what was it, K5R, I think it is. Yeah. XQ4FR. The basically the like the PF version of what was and for the Klingons the D5. Because obviously when it comes to the you have to have the PF tenders, you have to have the carriers. And these are full carriers, not like the Chicken Hawks, you know, which are basically six ships, six fighters. So to actually have a full squadron, you have to have two Chicken Hawks, you know, which is an interesting idea. You know, and the great thing about the Eagle series is you got those plasma Rs, which are always nice to have when it comes to fleet battles and having the longer range plasma. You know, to me that's always a good thing. And yeah, and of course the problem with the smaller ships is you really, other than launching it as a plasma R, you can't, you know, launch it as like a shotgun. You know, the power, you know, when it comes to the smaller ships, it doesn't really have the power that it's needed to do that and then move, you know, walk and chew gum at the same time, that kind of thing.
Well, one thing to bear in mind is that in order to have fast patrol ship tenders and stellar domination ships, you need to have the PFs to use them. And if you think about it, if you're in the timeline where the Sparrowhawk doesn't exist, then the Starhawk PF isn't going to exist either. So, because I believe Mike West did a proposal a couple of years back for a K-1 gunboat, which would basically be, if the Romulans got the blueprints for the G1, the Klingon G1 gunboat, but built their own versions of it, but with Romulan technology. So that would most likely be the default gunboat that these Romulans would use rather than the Centurion or the Starhawk. So that'd be another thing that would stand out as well.
Especially it, yeah. That's a good question when it comes to if you assume that, okay, you don't have the Hawk series, but you still have the Eagles, then in theory, you can still have the Centurions PFs. But would the a basic conversion, quote unquote, because I know it wouldn't be a conversion. It would be an augmentation based on the original plans from the Klingons when it comes to their PFs, their G1. It's G1, right? It's been so freaking long. And unfortunately, the G2 is actually a police ship, an actual ship, not a PF, that the Klingons used. So G1's actually a PF, and then G2 is actually a regular ship. You know, goofy. That's one thing I never liked. But anyway, based on the G1, in my mind, obviously, you know, they'd have the drones would be gone. They'd have plasma Fs instead of disruptors, but the question is how many plasma Fs would be able to be put on that ship? And obviously, you know, I would think the phaser array would still be the same because of the why would there be a reason to change it? And of course, well, actually, that is also a good question. Which is, if you don't have the Hawk series, and you don't have the Starhawk series when it comes to the PFs, what about the fighters? Does that change anything?
Well, the thing is that there's already probably too many empires in the Alpha Octant that import Klingon fighters because the Galerans do it, the LDR does it, and the Santorians do it. And So I don't know if you'd want to have the Romulans also do it, but give them plasmas instead of drones. I mean, I suppose you could do it, but I mean, I think maybe there's enough. Yeah, I guess you have to, you know. I mean, people want the Klingon type fighters, then, you know, I guess Shapeways would be happy because there, a bunch of them are on there already. But I don't know. I mean, it's little bit too ubiquitous already. But then, you know. But then, I mean, fair enough. Like with the Gorns, they import Federation designs for fighters and plasma is on them instead of drones. So, I mean, it does happen. So,
Yeah,
I guess
oh, I was thinking exactly
if
the
there's
same
some
thing.
demand for it, then no reason to do it. But
I was thinking exactly the same thing that, the Gorns are a perfect example of the conversion of fighters that had drones and just phasers into plasma fighters.
and the other thing as well is, because like if you look at it, if you recall from module R4J, there's like about five different alternate timelines that that product offers, that give you like various like circumstances, whatever, that the ships it offers would work in. So in theory, you could do the same. You could do something similar if you were offering the Kestrel ships. You could basically say, for example, well, maybe there's a timeline where the module C6 Corabians are still around, and the Kestrel Romulans are allied to them. So, if you're fighting a joint battle, then you're not basically using a Spiral Hawk to team up with a Corabian War Cruiser. You're using a converted D5 or modified D5 to team up instead. And, you know, would that be any better or worse in terms of trying to get the fix to work and stuff? And also, because in the timelines where the Paravians are allied to the Romulans are allowed their least access to survey in the Paravian off-map zone. So you could do the same thing here, but you're not using a Sparrowhawk C to do the survey. You're using a converted Klingon hull instead. Although I still think it would be a more interesting, an alternate timeline to have the Romulans import Paravian technology rather than Klingon technology. But that's a topic for another time.
You mean basically have the Romulans, let me see if I understand the premise in regards to that, which is that the Romulans might drop using plasma technology, plasma torpedoes, and switch to using quantum wave torpedoes? Is that part of the premise?
No, well, actually, I have a separate thread about that on the GDS. But the idea I was having is that in one of the MAPCP timelines, you could have it that instead of waiting until Y-159 to sign a treaty with the Klingons, maybe they sign a treaty decades earlier with the Paravians. So they basically still use plasmas, but perhaps they build Paravian-type hulls under license. So I think about how like we're talking about the Romulans basically licensing and producing Klingon-type hulls. But imagine something similar, but the license is with the Paravians instead. So if you think of those Paravian ships on Shapeways, you're now giving Romulan players an excuse to buy them.
Right. So, well, that'd be that actually brings up two questions, actually, which is one, obviously, the taking the Paravians and converting it to Romulan technology, cloak and plasma torpedoes, because they probably find it far superior to the quantum wave torpedoes. In a way, they are for what the Romulans want to do. And that's number one. And number two, the question, of course, comes in that would the introduction of that treaty with the Paravians, would that also affect the Hawk series? and how that actually that design came out. Because if you because you look at the Hawk series, when you go from the Kestrel to the Hawk series, overall, you know, they've got the same kind of overall vibe between the two. Yeah, are they different? Yeah, but they have the same ideas behind. Okay, you have the warps. You have two warps, one on each side, and so forth. Versus, in the case of the Paravians, where they have these extended wings, basically, and I forget the warp pods on the end of the wings, or are they all like a center warp for Paravians? I forget.
Well, if you bring up the Shapeways Paravians, do you still have the PDF for the Module C6 somewhere? I remember we were talking about it with Barry the other day, the other week. Because, basically the Paravians have middle, left, and right warp, or center, left, and right warp. But the other thing, one of the things about the Paravians is that the quantum wave torpedo launchers, they're all in centerline adjacent option mounts. And the ships most of them are able to land on planets. So unlike, say, a Spiral, like a Kestrel, because if you look at the Klingon converted ships, they put the plasmas on the nacelle caps. So because they're on opposite sides of the ship, there's not enough room to put a plasma R. But in theory, if you look at a Paravian heavy cruiser, all its four quantum wave torpedoes are lined up beside each other. So a Romulan could maybe take all four spots and put a plasma R in there.
Hmm.
And they'd be able to keep the ability to land on planets. So suddenly you're gaining an advantage tactically that the Klingon ship doesn't give you. But on the other hand, maybe there's less room to grow because my impression is that when you design a ship that can land on planets, you have to make certain design compromises because a ship that's designed to stay in open space, like for one thing, it doesn't have to find room to put the actual landing pads. And there's also certain, I guess, design, like shape or whatever, like you have to be able to make the ship a certain shape so that it can actually not burn up in the atmosphere or whatever, or not crash rather. So there's maybe probably less, the hull box counts might not necessarily be the same on a ship that can land on planets relative to one that stays in space. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, understood. I agree there. I got the Paravians up here, which is interesting. Because of the tail of the ship, of the Paravian ships, looks like it's mainly used for like shuttle bays and things like that. And you got the warp engines on the end of the wings. The tail is almost akin to a module. that'd be interesting. Which is the whole idea of the still have the idea of the Hawk series modules, but the modules basically would be part of a tail section, possibly. Instead of on top of the engines themselves, because that's usually with the Hawk series, that's where the modules were mounted, were right there on top of the engines. So I can imagine a detachable tail. This is what the Klingons would, not sorry, the Romulans would use instead of on Klingon technology, they based their ships on Paravian.
So Yeah, I mean, what was I going to say? Yeah, so if you look at the like the CA or the War Cruiser, for example, the only thing is that I mean, in theory, you could try to squeeze more plasma onto them, but then, as I was saying, with the whole thing about them being more restricted because of the need to land on planets, I'm wondering maybe that they can't go too high with the plasma, but then that could be a way to make sure that these ships are distinct from the Kestrels because, they do things that the Kestrels don't in other ways. And also, there's if you look at the number of landing parties, like a standard Caribbean heavy cruiser has like 20 Marine squads, so the Romulan version probably wouldn't have as many, but it'll still have more than the KR would have. So there'd be more of a sense that the Romulans are basically going to use this ship to launch raids on planetary surfaces. So that's why they keep more Marines with them, but not quite to the same extent that the Ravens themselves would do.
Understood. And basically, if you think about it, it'd be just a continuation of what the Eagle series had. Because the Eagle series, those ships could land on planets. And the Pravians also could. So, given that, no, the Hawk series in that case would also probably, since it's based on Praevian design, probably still re retain that ability to land on planets. Least you would think so, because the only reason I'm imagining that the Hawk series went towards, have so you couldn't no longer land on planets, and disgorge all these boarding parties safely, and went completely with the Klingon approach, which is the starship stayed in space. They never landed on a planet, and therefore, that itself dictates how you handle planetary invasions.
And there was another thing that, oh yeah, because when we're talking about gunboats, maybe what also happens is the Hummingbird PFs that are in Module C6, maybe the Romulans basically license the production of them too. So then you're replacing the quantum wave torpedoes with plasma Fs, or you're just using the phaser PFs, which basically look identical anyway.
Don't mind me. Okay, I'm looking for, oh, Songbird, there's Interceptors, Hummingbird, PFs. Okay, there they are. Okay. So, and
Well, of course, you'd have to pay the extra for the cloaking device.
right, of course. Okay, let's look at the regular Hummingbird. Okay, which has two quantum torpedoes. So that probably be converted into probably plasma Fs instead of quantum wave. Okay. That would definitely be interesting. Oh yeah, I forgot about that. I'm looking that the Hummingbird PFs has center warp. I'm not used to seeing center warp in PFs, to be honest. Because the bad thing about something like that is that that's a PF. Because if I recall correctly, the PFs, you have the warp booster packs. When you hit a certain warp, a warp pod, when it comes to the PFs, damage allocation, you then have to, if you hit that, then you have to roll again to see how much damage because you have the warp booster packs turned on, and how much additional damage you actually do to that nacelle, right, left, or center.
Well, the other thing too would be that because like in Peruvian use, those hummingbirds, they're designed to stay at a certain distance and they bombard you every turn with the corona wave torpedoes. But when you've only got plasma Fs and you've only got two of them per boat, like you can't, if you launch them both together, you'd have to wait two more turns, like three more turns to do it again. So I guess you'd be close to both the PS, but then you're losing more of the combat value, I guess you could say. But then I guess that's the same thing with the Romulans in general compared to the Peruvians. But you're hitting harder, but then you're waiting, anxiously for your plasma to reload.
We always well, that's always a constant worry when it comes to the Romulans. That's why they that's part a reason why they have the cloaking device to begin with, in my mind, anyway.
But yeah, so although I guess one other thing as well is that there's probably certain mission variants that the Romulans would have to do differently because, for example, if you look at the Peruvian minesweepers, they all keep their quantum wave torpedoes because quantum wave torpedoes are really good at sweeping mines because you can fire them every turn, and even at that short range, you don't need to overload them to destroy a mine. But if you are a Romulan, would you want to waste your plasma Fs in the same way, or like, would you want to basically convert those into phasers, and then you've suddenly got a less effective minesweeper? But that's what you have to deal with because that's just how it is. Like, you can't do any better than that. So, but I mean, that's fine because that's another one of those things, like the pluses and minuses of going this route. Like, it shouldn't be all good. I mean, there should be those kind of ins and outs in terms of what you get and what you don't.
Agreed, agreed. Okay, well, it's getting late, so I think I will wrap up with that. Gary, it was wonderful to have you around. Thank you for stopping on by.
Thank you. So just before I go real quick, which of those two ideas do you think sounds more interesting? More Kestrels or Romulan Peruvian ships?
To me, personally, the Romulan Peruvian ships. But that's me.
Well, I'd be happy to do both,
Overall,
but
I think,
I agree with the Brady one.
I think the Peruvian would, to me, would be more interesting. But the question comes into being, though, how many people are interested in the Peruvian ships to begin with? Because in my mind, I think there's probably would be more support, more interest overall, not in the Peruvians, but with more Kestrels because of they're based off of the Klingon design. And people like Klingon ships. So let's be honest here. And also, since both of them are part of the original canon of the original, basically being part of the original series, that they're more recognizable, and therefore, people be more willing to buy a product that has them in it. And of course, linking that up with Shapeways, I think one, it'd be easier to sell when it comes to Shapeways, and easier to create new ships for that. So it'd be less cost if you're thinking in that point of view. And as I said, I think given that it is based off the Klingon, a Klingon design, I think a lot more people will be interested in that kind of a product. Even though, as I said, I would prefer the Peruvian because I think that. Think they're more interesting myself. Okay. Well,
All right. Thank you so much. And have a good night.
you too. So, had a nice little discussion there about the Romulans and an alternate history, with the Kestrels going forward, you know, we had a little discussion there also about Starfleet Battle Force and how that, I think, could be a real, I think it's, if marketed properly and put out there, you know, because it's no longer, it's one of those great things about, I know that when ADB first created, it basically, the whole idea of Starfleet Battle Force, one of those ideas when it comes to selling it to people, which was, it was not a, it was a card game, which wasn't a collectible card game, i.e. you bought your deck, you played it. You didn't have to purchase another deck and another deck and another deck and another deck. Obviously, there's issues with that design, and ADB found that, which is, of course, the whole idea of if you want to get different ships in there or different empires there, you'll run into issues because of it changes the whole balance thing when it comes to the cards. But so, you know, I think that's one of those things with the Starfleet Battle Force. I think it could be a great marketing almost coup to bring people more interested into, say, hey, here's a card game which is based off the original series. So you're for most part, you know, it's and it might attract the people who originally played Starfleet Battles, but at least remind them that, hey, ADB still exists. Number two, that the they get to play these ships, but it's relatively simple. Because the thing is, Starfleet Battle Force isn't like a collectible card game, in that it actually has the whole idea of damage, and you have accumulative damage. To it's not like, okay, you know, is it alive or dead? If it's alive, okay, that's it. It's alive. You didn't kill it, or if it's dead, it's dead. You know, it's not as basic in that. But, yeah, and then, of course, if we go back to the Romulans, and I think, as I pointed out, I think the KRs, that had a lot more marketing value versus basing on the Klingons versus basing off the Paravians. Though, as I said, you know, Paravians, I think, are a lot more interesting as a question of what they would look like. And overall, an interesting alternate history. So, anyhow, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.